So, Eric, following up on something we were talking about a few weeks ago, you had a once-in-a-lifetime chance to interview a musical legend today.
Yes, a musical legend indeed. One of the hip-hop pioneers, the Curtis Blow.
Curtis Blow, that of Basketball, one of the great sporting songs ever.
One of the sporting songs ever.
How was Curtis? I'm legitimately curious. I just Wikipedia'd him. He's 60 years old now. He's coming to Utah, is that correct?
Yes, he will be in Salt Lake City on November 21st. He is the MC of Hip Hop Nutcracker.
Oh.
Yeah.
That sounds cool.
I've never heard of it before. It apparently has been going on for 6 years now. I found out from them that they have never been in Salt Lake before. This will be their first time.
Okay.
And yeah, I heard about it and I'm like, that does sound interesting.
Yeah.
And they were like, would you like to talk to Curtis Blow about it? I'm like, of course I would like to talk to Curtis Blow about the Hip Hop Nutcracker show.
So what did you learn?
I learned that, you know, it's a mashup of Tchaikovsky's music and modern dancing, kind of a modernized story. They keep most of the story the same, but they feature like breakdancers, b-boys. He made sure to break down all the different styles of dancing that they do. Popping and locking, I'm told, is a thing. He mentioned a few others that escaped my mind at the time, but at the moment. But he was a great guy to talk to. He was very pleasant. He was very excited about this. He's happy to see hip hop continue to evolve and make its way into the public consciousness in more ways still.
See, that's exactly what I wanted to hear about Curtis Blow, and is why he is truly a legend. You can see the Hip Hop Nutcracker November 21st at the Eccles Theater.
Yeah, it sounds intriguing, and you know, it just goes to show that in spite of the fact that he inflicted the song Basketball upon us,
did
that
you ask him about Basketball in particular?
You know, I considered it, but
you're the jazz beat writer. What are you doing?
Well, I'm a jazz writer, if you ask the Financial Times, so it was out of my wheelhouse.
Fair.
Maybe if I devoted more of my time to researching hip hop, you know, I could have been prepared for that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I debated it, but I didn't trust myself to not have the question accidentally come out more snarky than I intended it to, just given my personal feelings on it. But, you know, it was fine. We talked about his career. We talked about his involvement with Hip Hop Nutcracker. I got his thoughts on the state of modern hip hop, because I'm always curious to hear how the old timers feel about new things. And I got a little concerned initially because, like, he started by saying, well, I don't want to piss anybody off, so I'm just going to, I want to keep things positive. And then he went on to, like, just absolutely praise the evolution of it and talk about, like, you know, how back in the 80s, back in his day, like, it was, like, almost exclusively focused on, like, having fun and, you know, happy vibes and all of that. And just talking about how now, you know, it's more serious. He talked about how it's gotten, like, more intricate and, you know, he basically conceded, like, it was not all that sophisticated back in his day, and it's been, you know, he took it in a totally different direction than what I thought he was going to. So it was cool to hear.
And I think this is what I want from Basketball old timers too, is if we go and ask Larry Bird or Oscar Robertson or you know, whoever else, Jerry West, about Basketball today, I want them to acknowledge that Basketball has adopted and evolved for the better, not for the worse. That, you know, that it hasn't declined in any way because of whatever. You know, that's just kind of not how these kind of things develop. And I think it's cool that Curtis recognized that in the hip hop scene. And I think some Basketball old timers do. I think Steve Kerr is a notable example. But yeah. I wish
and you
more
would figure,
of them would
you would figure Jerry West. Would
True,
be the same considering the work he's done with the Warriors before and the Clippers now. And
good point.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it is always disappointing to hear, you know, some of the previous stars of the game, like, kind of come out and, oh, well, the game now, it's just nothing but dunks and three-pointers. And
yeah,
like,
that's awesome.
Like, this is a bad thing.
No,
you're right. You know, it's like, I grew up in, you know, watching 80s basketball, and so I can appreciate the era in which we had, you know, where it was dominated by seven-footers posting up all the time or whatever, but that doesn't mean that what we're watching now isn't awesome.
Have you watched an 80s game recently?
Every once in a while. So I used to have game six of the 1987 NBA Finals recorded where the Lakers clinched over the Celtics. And I used to have this on a VHS tape, and it got lost or thrown out at some point. And so now, about once a year, I'll go to YouTube, and you can find the game, and I'll go and watch it. And, yeah, I mean, like, it's I know what you're getting at, and it's correct. Like, a lot of it is nostalgia for, you know.
It's just not better.
And it's, yeah, I mean, a lot of it was bad.
I mean, yeah, everyone should just go back and go on YouTube and watch 19, like, not highlights, but, like, a game of 1980 basketball and just be like, what? This is ridiculous.
So,
like,
so many mid-range pull-ups.
Stop doing this, it was, stupids.
You know, when the Lakers got on the fast break, when Magic, you know, was finding James Worthy or Byron Scott filling the lane, that was entertaining. But, yeah.
Agreed. There are exceptions.
Yeah. But, yeah, I get your point.
Good.
I'm glad.
For the first time.
I'm not disagreeing with you. No.
Welcome into the Weekly Run. This is the Utah Jazz Podcast from the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Andy Larson. Eric Walden with us, as always. We are the Utah Jazz beat writers for the Trib. Again, we're coming at you after a very successful Jazz week. Four games in a row, in fact, that the Jazz have won. Against some really good teams, including the Philadelphia 76ers, the Milwaukee Bucks, and last night, the Brooklyn Nets, who may not fit in the very good team category, but still exist.
And the Golden State Warriors.
Golden State Warriors
do not
meet that fit criteria. In that, yeah.
Yeah. And who'd have thought that they'd be the dregs of that group coming into the season, right?
Right. Well, okay.
Or a year ago at this time, I guess.
I had belief in the Steph and Dre pick and roll saving them a little bit, and then Steph immediately got hurt, and then Draymond immediately got hurt. And now they're honestly down to only eight players, which is the minimum you can have, but they still have them, so they're still going to be playing basketball games. I'm curious. A couple things I want to talk about on the podcast today. One, I have a theory that I want to run by you. That is, the Jazz have four big-time offensive players, and that is Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley, Bojan Bogdanovic, and Rudy Gobert. And I know maybe some non-Jazz people would question me putting Rudy Gobert in that category, but given how efficient he is, given that he scored 16 points a game last year, I think he belongs there.
And the screen assists.
And the screen assists, sure. I mean, whatever.
Shout out Quinn Snyder.
Yeah. My theory is that if three of those guys have good games, the Jazz will win, and maybe easily. If guys have good games, it's going to be a close game that the Jazz can win or can lose. One like last night, to be honest.
Yeah.
And if one of those guys have a good game, the Jazz are kind of screwed. If zero, well, yeah, it's bad. If it's
then
four,
we're at DEFCON 1.
If it's four, then we're talking about like the, you know, Clippers game where you kind of had a 40-point blowout.
Yeah.
The first Clippers game, to be clear. Yeah. Or no, I'm thinking the first Kings game, excuse me.
Kings, yes. Yeah, I like this theory. This is interesting. This is intriguing.
Yeah, it's just like I want to call it – I need a name for this theory as well, like the number of good players that the Jazz have tonight index or something like that, but that sounds like too long. We need an acronym.
Yeah, that's a little verbose. You needed a good acronym before we unveiled this.
Yeah.
That was poor planning on your part.
No, I just haven't been able to come up with one. I would disagree that it's poor planning and more that it is poor creativity.
I'm just
going to
stick with the poor. Well, okay. Just so long as we're acknowledging your deficiencies.
Yeah, okay, fair.
But no, it is an intriguing theory. And yeah, I think you're definitely onto something because, yeah, as we saw last night, I mean, Donovan clearly had a great offensive game, 30 points, 13 for 26 from the field. Didn't shoot well from three, but was otherwise, I think he was 0 for 5 from three, I want to say.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're clearly counting his as a great
offensive. But he had a good game anyway.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah. Rudy, again, incredibly efficient, 8 for 10, so that's two. Mike also had 20 points, but 6 for 15 shooting.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of depends.
Was he 20 points? 19?
He had 18, okay. 6 of 15 shooting, 0 for 5 from
five
the field,
assists.
Did get to the line 9 times, made 6 of those, five assists, two turnovers. I mean, it's kind of 2.5, I guess, last night. To me, that was a fine game from Conley, about an average game from Conley.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think even you can kind of count it either way. To me, given that the game was as close as it was at the end, you know, it's probably it could have gone either way. But the Jazz also just missed, you know, like I said, a ton of three-point shots that they usually would make, only shooting 6-26 on the night.
That was with an improved second-half performance. They were 1-13 at halftime, 5-13 in the second half. So, yeah.
But also, you know, Kyrie Irving was really bad. So, anyway, I think
There were some mitigating factors there for sure. But, yeah you're right. I mean, Bogey did not have a great game. He was... What, 12 points, 5 of 13?
Yep.
Honestly, like, kind of invisible for most of the night.
Yeah, he just missed a shot, you know, like, he...
Not making his shots. So, yeah, that definitely plays into your theory there. I mean, 2.5 good offensive performances and struggling to beat the Brooklyn Nets, but ultimately pulling it off thanks to some big breakout performances from Jeff Green and Emmanuel Mudiay off the bench. That certainly helped.
Yeah, and we'll talk about those guys. But I do think that it generally has held up over the course of the schedule. You know, obviously against the Warriors, all of Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, and Mike Conley were really good because it's very easy to be very good against the Golden State Warriors. Against the Bucks, it was Bojan Bogdanovic, obviously, with the game winner. Donovan did not have a good night. Rudy Gobert did not have a good night, but Mike Conley did, scoring 20 points on 7 of 15 shooting. So there's your two there in a three-point buzzer-beating win. In the two-point win against the Sixers, it was Donovan Mitchell scoring 24, Bojan Bogdanovic scoring 20. Again, Rudy Gobert was only 4 of 8, Mike Conley only 6 of 15. So iffy. You know, like, it's so far, the recent close games have all been kind of two good Jazz players of those four. And then, you know, the loss against the Clippers, you looked at it, Mike Conley went 2 for 10 with 5 turnovers. Bogey went 7 of 17. Donovan Mitchell was the only guy who had a good game, 11 of 21 for 36 points.
Yeah, this is going to be a fascinating development to watch because, I mean, obviously this was kind of the idea in mind, you know, the master plan, so to speak, of the front office, in that a year ago, you know, you could count on a great Donovan offense performance more often than not, and an efficient one from Rudy.
Well, late in the season, I would say.
Yes, that's fair. That's fair. And an efficient, if not necessarily prolific one from Rudy, although, again, 16 points a game is nothing to sneeze at. But beyond those guys, like, who were you counting on regularly to be that
right.
You, third
you hope
person?
For Joe. And
you'd hope for Joe.
You hope for Ricky to have a good shooting night instead of a bad one. And you hope for Jay Crowder to go 5 for 10 from 3 instead of 2 for 10.
Yeah, but you would never go in believing that it was like a sure thing that any of those guys were going to be on that level. Whereas now, you know, it seems more of an aberration when Bogey doesn't have a good showing or, you know, when, yeah. I mean, now it's like you definitely expect two guys at least to have that kind of performance and if not three, you know, and then, yeah, obviously if you get all four kind of clicking simultaneously, then you're just living the good life of land,
winning games,
milk and honey, or whatever.
Sure, that's my theory, and I'm sticking to it, and it's something that I want to watch as the season progresses, and I'll write about it on Triple Team at some point because we always need Triple Team content.
Yeah, and let us know if you have a great name for this.
Yes.
For this theory, because Andy doesn't.
Yes. What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about kind of the difference in style of what we saw from the Jazz Monday night in San Francisco versus last night at the Viv. I just, like, maybe this is, like, simple, you know, but just the fact that one night they're winning by, you know, this absolute barrage of three-pointers, this very pretty offensive performance, and then a night later they come in, they won't, they didn't want to concede, they were tired from the quick back-to-back,
but they were.
I feel like pretty clearly they were, and it was an effort that was anything but pretty. You know, it was kind of an old-school Jazz grinded out, get defensive stops to claw back.
Win 1-15, 1-15, just like they did in the old days.
Well, but then at the end, yeah, get enough buckets. And so just the difference in those styles and the continuing versatility that we see from this team in ways that they can win the game as a result of having all these new pieces at Quinn's disposal just remains a fascinating subplot to me.
I thought they were pretty lucky last night.
They were, for sure.
Like, you know, I get that. So the threes didn't go in, and that was their, like, one unlucky point of view. But yep. I thought they were pretty bad defensively. Even they were – I went back and rewatched the fourth quarter, and I thought that they were not as good in the fourth quarter as their results indicated. Like, I thought Kyrie had some wide-open shots that he missed. I thought he had some floaters and layups that he usually converts. And a lot of that is Rudy Gobert, don't get me wrong. But, like, the Jazz also just got a little bit lucky.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I guess just what I would say is – a year ago, they were not getting lucky in these situations.
Yeah. You know? Definitely.
It was like every...
What were they, 4 of 19 when they were down within 5 points with 5 minutes left to go?
Like, yeah, and...
And they've had four wins so far this year in those situations?
0-7 in games decided by 3 points.
Maybe five.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So it was just... The fact that they are winning, finding ways
agreed.
To win
it's
those
huge.
Games this year. I mean, you know, the Milwaukee game where Bogey pulls it out with a three. Like, there just is a different vibe to it. And they're just... The fact that they're doing it in different ways in each game is just is fascinating to me. And so that'll be another thing that I'm interested to see as the year goes along. You know, how are they going to pull off this game? You know, is it, obviously you expect the defense is going to ratchet up at some point. But when it comes down to getting buckets, you know, is it just going to be Donovan? Are we going to see Bogey increasingly kind of step up in those key moments? What can we expect from Mike Conley going forward now that he seems to have a bit more of his footing underneath him? It's going to be interesting to watch.
Agreed. I think that's interesting. And I think, you know, the last two games have not been the best defensive performances of the season. But, again, right. Like you said, they still have come out with wins,
which is another intriguing fact. Because a year ago, if they weren't playing great defense – chances are they weren't going to win the game. You know, there's obviously some exceptions to that, but it just seemed like they were having to scratch and claw their way through everything, and they have a little more wiggle room now.
Yeah, agreed. And that's what having a better team is, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I don't think anyone would argue that this year's team is better than last year's.
No, not unless they're silly.
Yeah, or, you know, a Derek Favors fan or something.
Yeah.
Ricky's been killing it in Phoenix. He's got 22 assists in his one turnover in his last two games, I believe it is.
Yeah.
Like he's been phenomenal.
The Suns have been a fun team to watch. They've been overachievers for sure. He still can't shoot the ball. Like, I think he's regressed again there.
So this goes back to triple team topic, but floor raisers versus ceiling raisers.
Yeah.
I think Ricky Rubio is a floor raiser and not a ceiling raiser.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Where, you know, you can bring the Suns to relevance, which is pretty awesome. That's a big deal. I'm not saying Ricky Rubio should be an all-star, but, like, it is cool that Ricky Rubio can do that for you. Ricky Rubio turned them from nothing into something. But...
In my head, I'm, like, taking your quote out of context, and I'm putting in 50-point type Larson. Rubio should be an all-star.
I'm not saying... Okay, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. See, I ignored that part.
I see. And then... Sure. Listen, Ricky was FIBA MVP. So World Cup MVP, that's a pretty good honor. He doesn't need All-Star.
No, like, your point is well taken. You know, what he's doing for Phoenix is raising them up a level. Him doing those exact same things here in Utah would not have the same impact or effect, I feel like.
Yeah, and in particular would not in probably the playoffs where teams can scout it a little bit.
Yeah.
But still, Ricky's awesome. I'm very glad that he's... successful.
Yeah.
We talked about Jeff Green and Emmanuel Mudiay pretty extensively in last week's podcast. I do want to... They were very good. Well, okay. They had five really good minutes last night. They scored 19 points between them. Before that, going in, you know, through the first three quarters of that game, they were shooting 1 of 8 and were garnering multiple groans from press row.
I loved this triple team point of yours because, the recency bias that was in all of our heads after, you know, we're like, oh man, Jeff Green and Emmanuel Mudiay saved the day, which they did, but
they literally did.
But it was literally all in that 5-minute stretch, and everything before that was honestly like kind of bad.
Yeah.
But like, that doesn't stick out in your mind afterwards because, you know, oh, that 5-minute stretch, that was amazing. And that's, you know,
yeah,
and gave the Jazz all the momentum they needed, which I guess is ultimately the important thing for, you know, that game. But as like part of a bigger picture, yeah, like, I totally take your point. That triple team point is excellent.
Thank you. I think the box score for the whole game shows that, you know, they over the aggregate played well because of that fourth quarter.
Yeah.
But I do think that, like, that's something to acknowledge, is that it wasn't all roses, you know?
Yep.
I think the interesting fact, Ben Anderson had this point on Twitter, that Emmanuel Mudiay has yet to have a negative plus minus this year.
Wow.
That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, I would not have anticipated that, especially with some of these units that he's playing with, where, like, Ed Davis has struggled. I think Jeff Green has been up and down, those kind of things. And yet you look at if Emmanuel Mudiay, and some of it is because he's coming in early, playing with that six-minute through three-minute mark in the first and third quarter, so Donovan gets that rest, right?
Yeah.
But that's impressive. You know, that's for a guy who has been a net negative for his entire career. I mean, not to throw just a bunch of numbers at you, but that's exactly what I'm going to do right now, is when he was on the court with the Nuggets, he's been a negative 2.8 per 100, negative 5.5, negative 10.7, negative 8.8, negative 13.7, negative 11.2 with the Knicks last year. And then this season, he's plus 16.6. Emmanuel Mudiay has turned it around.
So clearly the conclusion that we should draw is that all of the failures of the Knicks last year and all of the success of the Jazz this year is entirely 100% attributable to
Emmanuel Mudiay. Yes.
So it's just him in a vacuum.
Yeah, and I mean, I would also say one of the big lessons we can take is 8 games of sample size of on-court, off-court stuff is probably not super great, but Mudiay has been significantly better than I thought he would be.
Will you say that again?
Sure. Emmanuel Mudiay has been significantly better than I thought it would be.
All right.
And that doesn't make him a perfect player. That doesn't make him even an above-average NBA backup point guard. That doesn't make him the savior. That doesn't mean he should be getting more minutes.
No.
That doesn't mean he can't improve.
I'm not arguing any of that. I'm just making the point. We debated when the Jazz announced his signing whether or not it was a mistake. You know, whether it was worth their time, just given the very clearly documented struggles that you just went through, that he had gone through. And, you know, we debated, like, does he have enough tools that the Jazz development staff can work with in order to kind of make him a functional piece? And I would say that this indicates that, to this point, that's been true. That's occurred. You know, again, he clearly still has deficiencies. You know, he still struggles on defense. Like, seeing, but, you know, he's trying. You see him, like, making effort in some areas where he didn't before. You see him, like, making little incremental improvements. He still is not a good defensive player. Offensively, he still makes wonky decisions sometimes. He still, like, kind of goes at his own pace sometimes. But there are things there that have helped more than they've hurt.
I agree.
You know, the fact that he is able to get downhill, that he is able to put pressure on the rim, that he is able to get into the lane, you know, and be fairly efficient at scoring it there thus far, is something that this Jazz team has been able to utilize.
Yeah, and he's actually improved his numbers from mid-range, which we didn't think was possible. And again, probably indicates that it's early, but he has, so credit to him. To me, I mean, my summer, the alternative was Howell Neto, right? Just keeping Howell Neto as your third-string point guard, or as your backup point guard. Or honestly, in my perfect world, they probably sign Emmanuel Mudiay and Howell Neto. And just I like Nigel Williams-Goss, don't get me wrong, but there's a reason he didn't even sniff playing time with Mudiay hurt, right? Like, when the Jazz didn't have any other point guard to go to, they still did not play Nigel Williams-Goss. And so I think that would have been my quote-unquote ideal point guard lineup, is to have Mudiay as your backup and Howell Neto as your third, or vice versa. But that being said, this has turned out to be pretty fine, and that's a credit to Mudiay.
Yeah.
To Mad-Eye Mudiay,
I had never heard that nickname before, but I absolutely love it. I told Katie about it last night. My wife, Mrs. Tribjazz, she's a big Harry Potter fan, and she was instantly a Moutier fan as a result of just him being gifted with that nickname.
Is Katie on Twitter?
She is not yet. She has told me the Trib Jazz account is closing in on 30,000 followers. She's like, ooh, let me know when Trib Jazz is one away, and then I will join Twitter to be your 30,000 follower.
And not until then.
But she's got weird reservations about it. I don't know. She's more a fan of Instagram. She's on Insta all the time.
Is she?
Yeah. Cool. So I guess she feels like, I don't need to waste more time with social media.
I mean, that's true. None of us need to waste more time with social media. So, like,
yeah.
My thing with Instagram is that, like, it all just feels very, like, I never learn anything new on Instagram, where I learn new things on Twitter all the time.
I feel the same. Like, I enjoy Twitter. I have an Instagram account, but I barely use it just because I don't, yeah.
I'm on it too frequently, and all I learn is, like, oh, yeah, my friend's in Mexico or whatever. You know, like, just people posting vacation photos and whatnot. And, like, it's a cool way to keep up with them. It's way better than Facebook for that because, but I don't learn any. I want to stay interested in Twitter. Twitter keeps me informed.
Yeah, like it reminds us that Emmanuel's nickname is Mad Eye Moutier.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is brilliant.
It is. As you look at one of the things, changing topics here from nicknames. one of the things I've heard about the schedule pretty consistently is first of all that the Jazz have had the hardest schedule in the league to this point, which, if you go by winning percentages of the teams that they've played so far, is actually true. You know, they've played the Clippers twice. That's a really good team. The Kings have turned it around and are now 5-5, I believe. Maybe they're 5-6. They're 3-6. Where was I getting 5? They're 4-6, excuse me. Sorry, I was looking at yesterday's standings, but still, a little bit have turned it around. They've played the Bucks and they've played the Sixers, the two best teams in the Eastern Conference. They've played... They played the Oklahoma City Thunder, who have turned out to be okay. They've played the Lakers. They've played the Suns, who have been good. You know, like, you just go down the list, and they've played some pretty good teams. But now you go into the stretch where they play some teams that haven't been so good. You know, they play Memphis on Friday, and then they play them in 2 weeks again. They play the New Orleans Pelicans in this stretch. They play the Minnesota Timberwolves 3 times in the next month. They play the Golden State Warriors twice in the next month, even beyond what they played on Monday. So I thought it was interesting looking at 538's game-by-game predictions.
Yep.
They have the Jazz favored in 20 of those next 22 games. And that does give you a sense that it's a time that the Jazz could rack up some wins.
Yeah, this definitely looks like a spot in the schedule where they really have an opportunity to kind of put themselves in great position for the rest of the season. I mean, it's been kind of a narrative these last few seasons, right? The Jazz getting off to poor starts, whether from injuries or other circumstances. You know, we had the injury to Rudy early on 2 years ago. Donovan obviously came in not quite right last year, and it just kind of put the team in these big holes to start off with that, you know, kind of limited what they were capable of by year's end. Like, even with that fantastic finish at the end 2 years ago, 29-6, that made them, what, the fifth seed? And then they're the fifth seed again a year ago. So the fact that they're off to an 8-3 start, second in the West, half a game behind the Lakers, and that they do have the stretch coming up, if they do what they're supposed to do, if they take care of business against, you know, the Pelicans, who are 2-8, and the Grizzlies, who are 2-7, and the Kings, who, as you mentioned, are 4-6. The Wolves are actually 6-4 at the moment, so that's not horrible.
That's the thing, is, like, I look at that 538 has the Jazz favored in those games, and I'm like, yeah, I see why, because, you know, the Jazz are a good team, and they're highly rated in a lot of different ways. Their net rating's great, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But then you look at the 5-game road trip that, you know, I'm going on in 2 weeks, the Milwaukee, Indiana, Memphis, Toronto, Philadelphia, and really that's 3-4 losses. Like,
yeah. What did you say they were favored in 20 of the next 22?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I agree with you. That's probably unrealistic. Like, it's extremely optimistic. I would say unrealistic.
Yeah.
You know, it's like some at that and, like, life happens. Life gets in the way, you know, as we saw last night. Like, they're favored to beat the Nets, but it's a short turnaround. They're tired, and it takes them, you know, an abysmal first half and getting yelled at by Quinn in the locker room or whatever it was, you know, half times like that are going to happen, he said. And for them to really kind of, you know, get things going against a, frankly, like, not brilliant Brooklyn Nets team.
I will say that they only have two back-to-backs in between now and the end of the year.
Yeah.
One of those is an easy one, is the New Orleans Pelicans at home. And it's a home-to-home back-to-back with Warriors, Pelicans, home back-to-back.
Okay.
Both of those should be wins, right? The other back-to-back is tough, is at Toronto, at Philly. And heck, you probably, given how well the Toronto Raptors are playing, you might want to say both of those are probably losses.
Yeah,
I mean,
both,
certainly
both
the
Sixers
game.
And Raptors are 7-3 at the moment and looking very, very good.
And then you've got at Bucks at the beginning of that trip, at Indiana, and it sounds like Victor Oladipo may be back by then.
And they've been 7-4 without
him. And they're 7-4 without, like, so.
Yeah, and then simply beyond all that, you know, it's like there are going to be nights where the Jazz aren't hitting their three-pointers, you know, or where they're coughing the ball up a little more than they usually do, which, you know.
They forget how to rebound, you know, like.
Yeah, they're giving up. They're giving up offensive rebounds. Stuff is going to happen. They're not going to go 20-2 over the stretch.
But they might go like 14-8.
Yeah, and if they take care of business in most of these games that they should, we're looking at them being in a very.
And what would they be if they went 14-8? They'd be 22-11. So that means they're winning 2/3 of their games. That means that they end up with 55 at the end of the year. All right.
Not horrible.
Not horrible.
Yeah. So obviously you would like better than 14-8 over that stretch, but it's not the end of the world if that's what it winds up being.
Yeah. The Atlanta, Charlotte, Miami stretch road trip in the middle of December. Now I'm just looking too far ahead, but oh well. And then there are a lot of home games early in the month. There's that 3-game home stretch, Lakers, Grizzlies, Thunder. That Lakers game, I would be very intrigued to see how the Jazz bounce back from their last loss against the Lakers, against what has been the league's best team so far, unfortunately. And then you've got the Blazers and Pistons at home to end the year, surrounding a road trip to the Clippers.
I think I'm going to get bumper stickers made up. Andy Boo Larson.
Of what?
Lakers, the best team in the league so far.
Eh, whatever. I mean, like, the people will know. They know about my LOL Lakers radio segment. Sadly, it appears that the era of Lakers missing the playoffs is over. I'm sorry that before the season, for the last 6 years, your franchise had tied the New York Nets and win, or New York Knicks in wins.
That was rough. That was honestly, like, worse than missing the playoffs every year, was being lumped in with the Knicks.
Yeah, well, good news.
Like, oh, man, this team that I've grown up rooting for is now on par with the team that Tony Jones roots for. That's not good.
No, it is not good. But anyway, here we are. Unfortunately, the Lakers have done it again.
They've turned the corner.
Somehow they got two really good players, and because every superstar deserves to go play with the Lakers. What a terrible, terrible league we live in.
I like that. Every superstar deserves to play with the Lakers. Yes.
I'm just channeling my inner Laker fan here, I guess. Like, anyway, that's it. Anything else you want to talk about before we wrap up the show?
No, just how much I'm enjoying Curtis Blow and looking forward to the hip-hop.
Are you doing a story on it?
I am. Yes, cool. You can read it. It will be appearing in print in the Salt Lake Tribune in this Sunday's edition. Oh. It will be online before then. You can read all about Hip Hop Nutcracker, which I know you're curious about. I'd never even heard of it before a week ago.
Well,
and it's been around for 6 years, and now the masses are intrigued, and they're like, "I think I will read that."
I will, and I hope they do too.
Yeah, see, you're pretty representative. You've got this curiosity thing going on.
I'm a legitimately curious person.
I've noticed this about you.
I like learning.
It's one of your finer qualities.
Thank you.
It helps make up for the other ones.
All right, and that wraps up the weekly run. As always, you can listen to us as a podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. But for now, Andy Larson, Eric Walden, signing out of the Salt Lake Tribune's weekly run. Adios.